I put some our you know what, I'm going to put the other resources here. Let's see, we have some questions or one question.
We do have a couple questions, so I wanted to go through those. Back when you had up the slide for the indicators of a good metro, we had a question come in asking about if we use evaluation cap, CAP, from George.
So we do not, I do not, I used to, not anymore. The reason I decided not to use CAP, because I have a problem with caps. With cap rates, it doesn't factor the principal reduction. It doesn't factor a little bit of appreciation. Some people say, I don't care about those things. Well, okay, I used to say the same, but then I realized after so many years, why would I not care about those things? They're part of it. So cap rates, if that's what you're asking by that, I would assume, does not factor those items, right? It's mainly the performance, the cash flow aspect of it. So for me, it doesn't tell the entire story, and that's why I stopped using it personally, right? Also, cap rate does not factor normally the fact that we may buy. Let me give you an example. About a year ago, one of our investors purchased two properties in Fort Worth from the estate of another investor of ours. And that situation was that he purchased those two rental properties in Fort Worth for a combined value of the two, $420,000 for two properties, right? They're not exactly half and half. Their one is a little bit more expensive, so $420,000. The appraisal, we knew those properties are worth about $550,000, $540,000. The appraisal came at $560,000, okay? Even if the appraisal came only at $520,000 or even $500,000, that's a lot below market, right? That's really, okay, that's a deep discount. Where is this discount? Let's call it $100,000, just a round number. $100,000 equity from day one, $80,000 equity, be even more conservative. Where is that equity? How is this equity factors into the cap rate, right? It doesn't. So for me, I get it. I used to be in that box. I just think that I can not ignore other factors that are working in my favor, that are representing a complete investment. And that's why I'm not using that. I'm using what I call the total ROI. Hopefully that answer that question properly. If I miss something or not sure, just please rephrase your questions rephrase or add. Yes.
Yeah, we just have one more. When we were going over the property analysis spreadsheet, Zach had asked if they could get the property analysis. They wanted to get the spreadsheet.
The analysis is available for purchase if you are, I think it's like $45 or something like that. If you are interested in having it, just because you want our analysis Excel. Our clients, if you become our clients, they get it for free. So it's up to you. I know I said I'm not going to sell anything, but since you asked, we can maybe, Jessica, you could put later in the chat, the analysis Excel is available on simplydoit.net/Excel. I know it's shocking, Excel.
All right. And we've got one more that just came in. Debbie wanted to know, can you say again what cap rates don't factor in? Equity and what else?
Appreciation.
Appreciation. Yeah.
Okay. I got a few direct messages here on my end. I have two of them. So one is, how COVID tenants' rights change altered your metro selection? It didn't. Because I cannot take COVID and say, okay, here's what COVID taught me in terms of eviction. I will say that it did teach me a few things, and I'll say what, but it didn't. There were no immediate conclusion that I can draw out of it because of the rarity of that situation. What I did learn from COVID are two things. But number one, maybe I'll start by saying, when I started working with, after the crash of 2008, one of the, I call it the core roots of my, how I look at the properties is the next crash or the next downturn is coming. I've been waiting for a downturn since 2009, right? I know it sounds maybe cliche to say now, but I've been, probably if you go back to some few of my recording, you will see over the years, I kept mentioning that, right? It's coming, it's coming, it's coming. I don't know when. I still think it's coming. I'm still not sure exactly when, although we are in a weird time. So I'm saying instead of being afraid of the downturn, I'm going to embrace it. I'm going to say, okay, it's coming. Let's prepare for it, right? How do I prepare? Resilient. So all those things, you know, it's kind of brought me to a lot of the decision making is starting it. It's coming. Let's not ignore it. Let's prepare for it. Resilient is the simple answer. I'm simplifying, right? So now when 10, what are we talking about? 12 years later, COVID arrives, right? 2020. And very quickly during the beginning of COVID, I get all the property managers on a conference call, like within a month, you know, like, let's share what's going on, what we're seeing. Everybody's overwhelmed. Not even a month, maybe 2 weeks. Okay, we're still learning, right? We're still trying to figure out what's going on. Obviously, I'm talking about not even April, maybe a beginning of April. And then mid-May, mid-June, mid-July, I call all every property manager of mine and I say, tell me what's going on. All of them are saying, we have few houses here, there. You know what, Danny? It's almost not a problem. Some of the problems we have are actually problems that started before and escalated. Some of the other ones we're dealing with very quickly. We noticed that our vacancy across our different properties in different areas actually went down, right? We know that now, but we were surprised. And every property manager that I call once mid-month, right? Because mid-month with the property manager, that means they're done with the cycle of collecting and done with the cycle of those who did not collect, sorted out or not. So when I talk to them around the 15th of every month, they already know what's going on, right? They're not like in the middle of collecting rents and like they're a little bit not sure what the answer is when the cycle is over. And they're like, okay, but wait, May, you know, June is coming, July is coming, right? I think I stopped calling them either July or August because the answers were pretty much the same. All of a sudden, I felt that my formula, the recipe of how to select a property and select metros earlier in our presentation is going through a stress test. And it's surviving the stress test. So first of all, for me, COVID was like a stress test. And why am I saying it? Because some of my peers, colleagues, friends that were dealing with lower end housing and with apartment buildings were telling me, we are very good. We are at 70% collection. And I'm like, I'm not going to say anything because we went from 95 or 96 to 97 collection, right? I knew that if I'm going to say that, they feel like I'm, you know, being snobbish or I'm being like laughing at them. But that's what happened. So for me, COVID was a stress test on everything I talked about this evening, right? So that's, and it passed really well. So that was nice to see. The second thing is I've learned with one of my houses. So, I think it was December of 2020. One of my tenants in Orlando, she lost her job a few months earlier. He lost his job in this end of December, right? Good people. I know them well. It's actually a house I manage myself. They've been tenants on time, no issues for 3 years, either 3 or 4 years. Really good people. Communicate, take care of the house. And he says, Danny, please, give me a month or two, please. I know you don't have to. I know. I'm like, you know what? It's okay. Plus, I thought in my mind, I can't evict them anyway. But he asked for it, and I decided to be here. And I said, listen, I'll do it. But I want you to understand, I am paying for you at the moment because I'm still paying for the mortgage. Or I could delay, but I just wanted to not have any. I have PMI on my mortgage, and if I'm late on my mortgage, I have to pay the PMI. I get it extended. It's a mess, right? So I want to make sure I don't miss any payments for whatever reason. So the PMI, I can get rid of it, right, as soon as possible. It's not fun situation. Not fun. It's mortgages, whatever. Horrible people to deal with. Necessary evil. Anyway, and then I see they're kind of taking a little bit, the tenants are taking a little bit longer. I call an attorney in Florida. I say, here's the situation. I said, Danny, hang on a second. Just because there's a moratorium doesn't mean you cannot go in eviction. I'm still not going through eviction. I know, I also only want to know my position. She gave me a full explanation how, although there's a moratorium, I can still go through it with an eviction. And explains to me why. I can't even repeat that because that's been a while. So that's the other thing I've learned about tenant situation, eviction. Even with the with all the moratorium was around us, I could still file if needed. Not everything is fine. They paid. They slowly caught up with the 2 or 3 months they missed. Now they're even. The rent even went up. So everything is fine. But at least I knew based on that conversation that the common, remember, conventional, I don't want to say stupidity or knowledge at this point, was you cannot evict. When I took the time and spoke to an attorney, guess what? Yes, you can, Danny. You can go and you have to do this, you have to do that, whatever. I can't remember all the steps. I never had to follow through on that, but at least I knew if it's going to continue to be bad with them, I'm not in a disadvantage because of the moratorium. Right. So that's the other thing that taught me, just because there's something going on doesn't mean it's impacting me, or maybe there's a way to navigate legally. I'm only doing things legally within the system, right? There's no need to be creative out of the legal system because legal system presents you with options, right? So that's kind of the other outcome. Hopefully that helps with that question. I have another question here. So someone is asking about how do I define the best states with the projected employment and population growth? When I choose a state, not a state. Well, okay. So first of all, I think your question is, or maybe the question is, how do we know where the growth patterns are, right? You can go to different statistics website like the government, which is very hard to understand and difficult to follow. There is a little bit of a shortcut. It's called national moving companies, such as U-Haul, Van Lines, and there's a third one, I can't remember, maybe even Mayflower, I can't remember the third one. Those companies, every year, what they do, all of those companies, they track trucks. How many trucks left California? How many moving trucks came in? How many moves came in, how many moves out? And then they say, okay, California, don't quote me here, in 2020, there are 10,000 trucks moving out, of people moving out of California, and 5,000 trucks moving in, right? Just making up the numbers. That tells you what's going on in California, right? And then they do the equal on in Texas and in Vermont and everywhere. And U-Haul does it. Van Lines does it, you know, Atlas Van Lines, other companies probably do it, and you can see where the growth, and they show, you can see year by year in color coding, in percentages, very easy to follow. You don't need to spend a whole evening. You don't even need to recruit your ChatGPT effort. You just go on those websites and you get to see those answers. So that will tell you who's losing and who's gaining, and you can see those patterns, happening. I would, if I'm going to go and check those, I would kind of be a little bit kind of careful with the COVID phase, because we are, in a way, we are at the on the other end of the COVID era, which people, I think there's some people that are coming back. A lot of it has to do with employers saying, you need to work from the office, right? Or hybrid or something. So not everybody that left to Austin is staying in Austin. Some of them are coming back because they think it's better for their career, or maybe there's a kind of a demand from an employer, right? So that we have to be a little bit careful, but at least, you know what? Just go to 20 or all the way to 2019 and see what happens. That will tell you already the story. So that's how you find where the population is going. Population. When it comes to employment, you either go to government statistics websites, or you go to a certain metro and you look for either the chamber of commerce of that metro or county, or they use different than the employment center or the greater Dallas business development. They have different names for every metro. And usually there's an office or agency that are government agency, and their responsibility is to, in a way, put those figures together, because what they're trying to do is to show off. They are not attracting us, the small investors. They're attracting a big company in San Diego with 300 employees to move their operation to Dallas, to name one, and they want to show that employer what kind of tax benefits they have and what kind of a labor force they have and how much the housing costs, et cetera. So they every year put the packages of that information to help everyone. They're not targeting us, but we're benefiting to get that that information. But the problem is each region or area or metro just goes under a different name. And that's a little bit challenging to find it. Many times Chamber of Commerce will have that information or will have internal leaks from the Chamber of Commerce to that website. So I remember in Kansas City, there is exactly, I can't remember their name, that the Greater Kansas City Metro Development, whatever. And they have exactly that information. And I think a local Chamber of Commerce links to that website so people can benefit from it. I hope that helps. Very good. Are we getting more questions, Jessica, on your end?
We do. We've got a couple. We've got one saying, wanting to know, how have we adapted to the rising interest rates and how do we find good lenders and what strategies do we use to cash flow with this?
Excellent. So that's multiple points. Let's talk about the interest rate. That's probably the biggest herd of elephants in the room. It's not even one. Okay. So first of all, that's a challenge, major challenge these days to cash flow with the high interest rate. My approach is this. Number one, let's exploit what's going on in the marketplace where a lot of people are hesitant to buy because of the interest rate. A lot of people are hesitant. When I say people, I don't mean investors. People. The real estate, the U.S. real estate, the residential U.S. real estate is not led by real estate investors. It's led by homeowners with a big tail of real estate investors, ourselves. So let's tackle that by saying, all right, the attitude out there is there that there is less buyers. By the way, there are also less sellers. If houses are sitting a little bit longer, maybe I can make a little bit more of an aggressive offer, and that will help me lower the price. It's not going to always work, but let's try, exploit the time and get a lower price will help me with the cash flow, and a lower price will maybe have some equity built in from day one to hedge if the economy slows down further. So that's a double win here if we're able to do it. The challenge is, obviously, if we're seeing a house that was put on the market in the past week, they're not normally motivated to work with us on a lower price. So we need to find those houses that are sitting a little bit longer. They're available. We just made, let me give you an example, Metro Birmingham, Alabama, a house that's been on the market for about 3 months, started at 250. Probably its market value is about 250. They lowered, I can't remember when, to 242. We made an offer for 220. They came down to 232. And that's where we stop, because the buyer didn't want to go towards 230, although that's what I told them they should before we submitted an offer. And they wanted to end around 227,500. Seller didn't want to go down to 230. So we are at about $4,000 gap, which I think we will still be able to close, in the coming days. We're waiting for another offer to see if it materializes or not. We actually got an answer on the other offer that they are countering, not too horrific. So we may be able to close that gap if each party comes a bit closer. So 4,000 ish is not a big gap to close. So that just tells you here's an opportunity. So that means if we buy it, let's just even say for 230, it probably has $15,000 in equity, and it tells me with the cash flow. So that's the ideal scenario. Make it more of an aggressive offer, offset the price, helps with the cash flow, helps with the equity. The challenge is, there's all, demand has dropped, but also supply. So when we are seeing houses out there that are priced well, we still have multiple offers. We have a house, the one in St. Louis, that we made an offer yesterday. The agent was at the house today, sent a report and a video and what they countered. And he said, there's a lot of foot traffic by different parties looking at his house. So that means they're countering to us, but we can tell there's more lurking, you know, around, right? So that just doesn't mean we're gonna, you know, you can see from their counter, they're not that flexible, right? They're just a little bit flexible. Their counter is like $3,000 deposit instead of $2,000, right? Stuff like that. So there's a challenge of inventory. Absolutely. Don't expect multiple houses sitting on the market for a long time. Easy for us to pick as buyers. Still a challenge. Now that we dealt with it on one way, let me tell you how I deal with it, you know, in a different way. So I think that in the next 2 to 4 years, I don't know if it's going to be sooner or later, but somewhere along the next 2 to 4 years, interest rate, and we're maybe already getting a hint from the Fed that they're going to do that, or at least stop raising the rate, not sure yet. But let's just say somewhere in the next 2 to 4 years, the interest rate would drop down from 7-ish to 5.5, right? Maybe even 5. So that means I'm going to have, let's say I'm buying a property today using the methodology of trying to be a little bit more aggressive with the offer. And let's just say in 3 years, I'm going to be able to lower it to 5.5%. So I'm going to have 3 years of tight cash flow, maybe $100 a month or so. But within 3 years or so, no promises exactly when it's going to happen, I will have the opportunity to refinance to a reasonable rate. I've been doing it for many years. I don't remember a long period of times that the rate for investors were less than 4. The past few years of COVID era is not normal. And I also don't remember it lasted, more than 6.5-7% for a lengthy period of time. Normally, most times, it was around 5-5.5-ish, right? So I believe it will go down to around that level. And when we get to that point, we'll refinance and we'll get a lower rate and a better cash flow. We don't even have to pull cash out just to generate a better cash flow. So between those two strategies, trying to buy it a bit of a with some equity built in from day one, which is helping with the current rate and exploiting, you have to come down to me, you have to meet me at the lower price, the rate is so high. I'm using that, right? I'm crying about it, so to speak, to help convince a seller to go down in price, explaining or blaming the rate. I'm using it to my benefit or trying to use it to my benefit, and then refi in 3 or so years, and then we'll have a better time with the problem. So it's not ideal right now, but I think the opportunity, it's not, for me, I look at it, this is not, should I buy or should I not buy? It's how should I buy? What's the right method to go about it? Because there are also, there's also a chance that within a few months or a year, because there's still high demand for housing in the US, relatively to the supply, it will start going up, either we don't need it to go up crazily. More buyers are coming back to the market, again, it will be difficult for us, right? So now we have some window of opportunity where there's less buyers in the market. Let's use that, right? That window may close in 6 months, in a year, when buyers are coming back again, without making it crazy like the COVID era. Just the fact that there's more buyers will make it difficult for us. And then we lose that window of opportunity. I hope whoever asked that, I was able. Yeah.
Can I add something to that? I mean, so as we were talking about, buying strategies, there's also something that I think people lose sight of is, so say, for example, we're taking the 3 years before we're able to refinance to a more reasonable rate and increase our monthly cash flow. During that 3 years, we're still going to be incrementally raising our rents and we're still going to be appreciating in value. So my age old adage is, you can always refinance your mortgage, but you can't go back in time and pay less for the house. So I think it's playing the rate game right now, taking advantage of the benefits that we have in front of us and utilizing those for when we can position ourselves better in the future. So you're still going to have that equity. You're still going to have those increased rents, but then all of a sudden when we're able to, we can refinance that and then cash in on top of it. So I don't want people to lose sight of, you know, it's like a stool with three legs, right? I mean, you need all of the legs, you know, you need the appreciation, you need the rent, and you need your mortgage rate. So without one of those, the stool doesn't work. So I think those are really good, you know, other items to keep in mind when you're talking about mortgage, like don't let that be your only factor.
Thank you. Good point. Thanks, Jessica. Yeah.
So we have one other quick question also about mortgages. So would you prefer 20% down with no PMI or 3-5% down with PMI and more cash to invest in additional properties?
Wait, wait, say that again. 20% down with PMI?
No PMI. 20% down, no PMI, or 3-5% down with PMI and then keeping the residual cash to invest in additional properties.
In my world of real estate, as a rental property and investment property, the option of less than 20% since the crash of 2008 doesn't exist. So maybe the question is not necessarily just about rental properties, and it comes more of a personal residence. And then more factors are involved. I can tell you, for example, I don't know. I'm kind of shifting now to out of the investment world into the personal, let's say, primary residence. I'm assuming that's where you're thinking. In a primary residence, the first thing that I would want to know is: is your mortgage with a 3-5% down above the jumbo loan or below? Because your rate is going to be completely different above or below. So if you're below with the 5% down, then maybe that would be, and it's your house you're buying, I would probably think it could work, assuming you're not putting yourself in a stretch. So if you're struggling to if you have the ability to put 20% down, but you want to put 5 because you can, and you're struggling because of that, or you're jeopardizing your equity, you know, future equity in the house, I think to do something a little bit more conservative is smarter. But if you're saying, yeah, it doesn't matter either way, if I buy my primary with 5% down, I can handle it, and then I have some money left over because of it to invest, it makes sense to me, assuming the other things I talked about happen, like the jumbo loan. So I'm a little bit kind of feeling uncomfortable with, because it's a general question. It has to come with a very tangible situation, not yours.
They were referring to purchasing a multifamily, like a duplex property, and that where you live in one of the units and rent out the others. So that would technically qualify as a primary residence to offer the
very loan. Good. What is the rent on the other side? Can you, with the rent of the other side, offset a little bit of your mortgage, part of the mortgage, all of your mortgage? So you see, then I would, instead of giving you an answer, what I do in situations like this, and we do it, Jessica and I, maybe once a week or every other week, we just use our analysis Excel with a 20% down, and then taking the same Excel and using it with the other option of 3-5, and we're just doing side-by-side comparison, which one makes more sense. Again, it's not what makes sense to us, what makes sense to you as a financial investment, or the risk you're seeing from the one versus the other. So I would say if 5% is 3-5, right, is available to you in this situation, and the numbers do work with the incorporated other side, the other unit, what's called sometimes house hacking, perfect. I would do that. Again, carefully saying, without seeing the numbers, right? Jessica, you're on mute, by the way.
Sorry about that. Yep. I think that's it for us as far as questions are concerned. I can open it up if anybody has a question that just popped up. I've made it available that you can unmute yourselves and ask a question directly. We can wait a couple seconds and see if anybody's got something that's on their mind.
I think it's a wrap, Jessica. 2 hours in, some you know, equality 15 survived. Good for you.
All right.
Yeah, perfect. You know how to get in touch with us. You know, hopefully we hear from you in the near future. Massage session, another question maybe, no problem. And Jessica, thanks for handling everything. Have a terrific night and a terrific weekend, everyone. And hope to talk to you soon.
Yeah, thanks, everybody. Have a good night.
Bye-bye.
Bye.